you start out a little bit slower. And then once you progress, you realize that you don't have to do all of the training wheels exercises that you were doing when you started out. Stuff gets better and you learn the things that work for you or that don't work for you, and you have to let them go.
There's over 1.9 million podcasts. Most of them never see the results they expected. They want to monetize, but their show ends up costing them money, and they never achieve the listenership they desire. This show will help you launch, grow, monetize, and inspire with your podcast. Get ready to take notes, because here's your host, Adam Adams.
Welcome back to The Pop, the podcast on podcasting. I am your host, Triple A Adams. That's Adam A. Adams. Yes, that's my real name for those of you who don't know me. And I'm excited because in this episode, we're going to be talking about how you can become a better interviewer by adding a lot of value to your guest. And by that, I mean really letting your guest shine, drawing out the good of who that person is and the story that they have, and to be able to make sure that you're delivering something that's not only valuable to your guest, but valuable to your listener. A mistake that I often hear people do is that they want to add value to themselves, which is fine if that's your goal of launching your own podcast is to pick people's brains for free. You can absolutely do that. But if you're forgetting to add value to the guest and you're forgetting to add value to the listener, then you might be neglecting and you would get your value from the show, but you're not going to have listeners that are getting value from the show. So Christoph, I said it wrong already, and I practiced it too. Christoph Zajac Denik is on the show, and I'm actually really thrilled because he's got a very interesting story, a very interesting podcast, something that we don't hear all the time. And me just getting to know him over the past few weeks or so, we've had a couple of private messages, a phone call, and now we had the pre-interview just before we got started with this. Remarkable guy, and I think that you're going to be interested to see how he adds value to his guest by drawing out the good for both the guest and for the listener. So with that said, Christoph, you've got just so many things going on. Like, I don't even know where exactly to start, but I'm going through your bio, which, by the way, when people come on this show, I ask them for a short bio. I'm like, please make this succinct. And he wrote me a novel, and the whole thing is awesome. Talking about being 4 foot, 4 inches tall, coming from, you know, Michigan State University, having a TV background, being on movies and all these cool things. Like, he's got an amazing story. And so why don't we just do this? Christoph, I know the value that we want to give our listener, speaking of drawing out the good.
Yeah.
I know the value that we want to give our listener is to be able to be a better interviewer. But you have a lot of experiences that kind of bring you there. So why don't you just share the pieces of the background, any stories that are really going to help us have some of these lessons stick for us? Tell us about your show. I'm excited to know about the show. And look, I'll cut you off if I have a question, but I'm just, you're a natural at this. You've been doing this for a while. So I'm going to turn it over to you. And 3, 2, 1, go.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me on the show, Adam. This is a pleasure. This is awesome. Yeah, I am 4 foot, 4 inches tall, if you didn't know from my voice, which you shouldn't know from my voice. But yeah, my life experience has been very unique, and it's molded that approach to my podcast. My show is called I'm Kind of a Big Deal, and I specifically deal with people's lives affected with dwarfism. And it's been such a struggle to get where I am, because when I was younger, I didn't want to address my condition or my dwarfism in a social way. I was forced to address it medically. My parents saw that there was an issue and I had to see specific doctors in order to actually be able to function and move around and live a life where I was riding bikes and, you know, skateboarding and running and playing basketball and all these other things that, you know, kids do. But before I could do that, I had to have leg surgeries and a spinal fusion in my back from T1 to L4. So essentially my entire back is a solid bone connected with rods and hooks attached to my spine. And it's been that way since I was 17 years old. Without having those operations and having those, I call them like business meetings for my health, because when I was 2, we had to start going to see a doctor and, you know, having my x-rays scrutinized by multiple doctors in the exam room and, you know, being prepped for surgeries and then having to recover for 3 months in a body cast and then go through physical therapy multiple times in my life. And that has brought up a theme on my show that little people have to grow up before everyone else. You know, it's not a normal thing for a kid to be seeing his bones on an x-ray screen at 4 years old and having doctors say, well, if we cut here and we put in some metal plates here and there's some screws there and you know, he's going to have this again in 10 years. You know, it's, those are all heavy things when kids normally are just focused on playing in the dirt and taking naps and doing whatever kids do. I did all that stuff too, but I also had to be in those health meetings, you know, and show up for the surgeries because without me there, it was pointless.
Right.
But, you know, on top of that stuff, I dealt with social issues when I was a kid. You know, you're kind of the same height for a while when you're a little person as other kids. And then maybe 7, 8, 9, 10, everyone else around you shoots up in height. You do not. You stay the same height and you don't grow that much more. I've been 4'4" for, I don't know, maybe since I was 10. I'm not sure. But I know that there was a point where everybody else around me, you know, I had to start looking up to them physically. And when you're not around your friends or you're in public places and kids who've never seen a little person or even parents who haven't seen a little person, you know, they have reactions and they can make fun of, they can ostracize, they can push you away, they can, you know, grab their kid and say, don't stare, like we're going right now. And all of that stuff instills fear. It all just builds on this fear that difference is not acceptable and disability is not acceptable. You know, I was just messaging with a new fan of my show on Instagram, and she was talking about how, you know, people just don't accept disability to the end that people who are disabled don't even accept their own disability. It took me so many years to accept that I was actually disabled after having 2 leg surgeries and a spinal fusion in order to just not have pain and not get around. And so my story I felt was unique, and this is all the medical stuff, but my, you know, after that I've had just incredible life experiences and job experiences. And, you know, I went to college and then I graduated and I started working as a TV producer for local television companies. And then while I was doing that, I loved drumming and I played drums for since I was 15, and I started a rock and roll band, and my rock and roll band toured the US and Europe for 6 years. You know, we're from Detroit and we built our fan base and we, you know, worked our butts off to get to that level. And then I left the band after 6 years and moved to Hollywood, played a little bit of drums on television and movies and stuff in Hollywood. And then because of my height, I started to get hired as an actor, a stuntman and, you know, a costume performer. And I've done that for 11 years. I'm also an avid surfer. I've been addicted to surfing since I was 14 and just looking at magazines and all these things. And like, and it's crazy to think back, because the first interview that I have on my show is with my mom. And my mom talks about the first day that I was alive, and the doctor came in as soon as I was born, they instantly knew that something was different with me. They didn't know what it was. They knew it was probably some sort of dwarfism, but the doctor came in and talked to my mom and said, I just want to let you know your son will never run. He'll never ride a bicycle. He'll never be physically active. He might be in pain. And how devastating is that for a new mother to hear that, you know, her one day old child is not going to be able to have any sort of semblance of a normal life as a kid or as an adult. And so with all of these things that happened in my life, I was encouraged through another friend who has known me for a long time. You know, you should tell your story. You should talk about your childhood and your jobs and all these things. And you're coming to accept yourself as a little person and other little people, because I just rejected other little people for the longest time. Did not want to have community with them or anything like that. And I started the podcast with my friend, and it was supposed to be about me, but I don't know. I don't really want to just talk about me on a show. And when I also showed the show to, like, my intro to a friend of mine, another short statured friend of mine, she instantly responded and said, "Why is it that I feel the exact same way that you do? Why have I felt the same way that you have growing up and rejecting little people and not wanting to be seen and not wanting to put myself out there and have community with other little people?" And the light just went off. I said, okay, this is the show. I want to share what all these other people that I've met along my, you know, path, they have incredible stories too. They've struggled so hard. They've struggled so much, and they shine brighter than other people who are average height and, you know, attempting to do other things. And I think out of that struggle, it forces you, you know, some of my guests have said, you know, I wouldn't be who I am if I wasn't a dwarf or a little person, you know, or if I wasn't affected by dwarfism, or if I didn't have to have all the surgeries that I had. You know, it's made me who I am. And so I have an issue that average height people on the whole, for the most part, don't have that experience with little people. You know, I still receive looks. I still have people trying to take clandestine photos of me. I still have people pointing me out in the grocery store and saying, you know, "There's a midget. Oh, don't look. That guy's really short. Like, did you see that guy?" And, you know, because I live in my world and in my body, that doesn't mean that everybody else understands what the heck is going on. And so I'm kind of a big deal is an attempt to create a bridge between the average height world and little people, and have understanding and compassion and empathy and exposure and experience to our lives.
Love it. All right. Now I want to...
I talked a lot.
All good. My goal with the podcast is, well, first off, you know, if you're listening to the show and you want to be part of that bridge where we're bridging the gap, where Christoph is bridging the gap between regular sized people and midget dwarfism people. Yep.
I will say, using the term midget is offensive. So
see, I ruined it. And no, I think no. I heard you use the word like a second ago, which is why it went into my brain, why I neglected to use the right one. But two things. Number one, you're right. And I didn't mean to do that. But I think for the listener, if depending on whoever you are, if you want to be part of it, you've got this awesome show, I'm Kind of a Big Deal. And Christoph is the host, who's a surfer, a drummer, an actor, you name it. He's done it all and proved the doctors wrong. But to fast forward to this place in this episode, my goal with you, the listener, is to give you tangible value toward you being a better podcaster, to be able to have better conversations with your guest and be able to drive that conversation to add value to your guest and to add value to your listener. And for me, you can see I'm working on adding value to my guest, Christoph, making sure that people know about his show, what he's going on, being able to be pulled into his world. And so if that's what you're looking to do, he's got that value, right? And then the other way that Christoph can add value to you, the listener, is to actually give you value, then he feels great that he's giving that. So I want to give him that opportunity to teach us, because your podcast has a very particular type of person that you interview. And I think what you've learned in interviewing your guest is that you found ways of really extracting the good, showing that perfection is a lie, drawing out the good from each person that you have on the show. And I want you to share that with our listeners, so that regardless of what our podcast is about, it might be about music, it might be about real estate, it might be about the law, it might be about so many different things. This show is about podcasting. But when you have your show, I want you to be able to ask really good questions. And I think Christoph is going to be able to help you to get there. So I'll turn that over to you as well.
Yeah. So I've always kind of been intrigued by other people's stories. And when I go into an interview, I think this is one thing that I think I've gotten good at. And I also struggle with it at the same time. But when I'm interviewing people in kind of touchy subjects, you know, it's, they can be very personal. They can be very, they can be something that they haven't talked about or haven't wanted to talk about, or because we haven't talked about them, it's difficult to put the feelings and the thoughts into words that make sense. You know, if you don't get the chance to answer some questions, you don't get good at making those questions sound succinct or, you know, actually expressing your actual thoughts and feelings. So what I have found is that I kind of take a lengthy process with my guests. I've mainly interviewed friends or friends of friends at the moment, and all of the stories have been so incredible. And my format for season one has been, you know, multiple parts per guest for the most part. And so, you know, it'll be an episode about their upbringing and then an episode about some of the struggles that they've had or their career. And then, you know, what's happening now. And I just kind of didn't want to cut things out. And so part of a learning process, it gets you more episodes if you can turn one interview. But my interviews would last 4 hours long because I would just talk to these people and it was just one thing after the other after the other. And it was all brilliant. It's amazing what these little people have gone through and what they are capable and what they are executing and their attitudes and their thoughts and feelings along the way. So I just felt like I couldn't just ram jam an interview together. I had to spend the time, you know, do research. A lot of my guests have social media accounts, you know, or they have YouTube videos. One of them is an extremely talented pianist and he has a whole YouTube channel with all of his piano works and stuff. And so, you know, I want to do the research because I don't want to have, I don't want to have a gap in knowledge, you know, because I feel like once you go, once you meet that person, at least with some background knowledge on where they are, you can get so much deeper, so much more quickly. It's amazing how that happens. To me, that's like where the magic is. Like you can prepare and prepare and prepare. And I don't think you can over prepare because you're not talking with that person. You're seeing them through a veil on the internet or, you know, in a phone call or something like that. But then once you get in an interview and you ask some pointed questions and you know where they are going to shine, you can get in there and you can get some amazing content and some amazing stories. And so because my guests most likely have not been so open about their dwarfism, I spend time. And so I've been mostly approached by my current guests, you know, that want to be on the show or they feel like it's important to be on the show. But now I'm reaching out to other people who I don't know as well. And I have to do research and I have to figure out who they are, what they've done, what is interesting about them. And in doing that work, I spend time. And then I really, really like to have a phone call before I get to the interview. And so season two of my show is I'm planning to have one episode per person. I want to compile more guests and have more episodes with just, you know, a single focus. And so that is tough. That's really tough because there really is so much to talk about. And when you're talking about dwarfism, because there's so few resources, we can talk about everything and it really doesn't get old. If I can be so bold to say that, just because, you know, the experience is so limited with for average height people. So I just spend my time, you know, I do my research on people. I think about them a lot. And then I try to have a phone call that kind of breaks down any walls or barriers. And then I keep it light. We get into some heavy stuff on my show, but I don't want to do a show that is not entertaining. And if you have the camaraderie and you have the back and forth, you know, even if it's 10 minutes before the interview, I just talk about just some dumb stuff. Like, what did your animal do? Or what's your favorite color? Or, you know, what's the silliest thing that happened to you in the last couple months? You know, just talk about some dumb stuff just to get the blood flowing and get things loose and then hop in and say, okay, how did you feel about this being a little person? Because if you just jump in cold, I don't want to answer that question. You know what I mean? But if there's like a rapport that's there, I think it's just loosens things up and other things will come out and you can be like, wow, I didn't even know this about you, even though I knew like A, B, and C. Tell me about that. That's cool.
So I've got a few takeaways already that I definitely want to make sure that the listener caught. One of the first things is the amount of time that you personally spend before an interview even happens. And I don't think everybody does that. I don't usually do that myself. A lot of times I'll offer to have a one-on-one phone call, like up front, like yep. you and I did.
Yeah, but, we had a great phone call.
I don't always ask for that. I'm not like, please do a call. It's usually like, come on the show. And if you want to have a call, then we can. Mm-hmm. And I usually appreciate those calls. With yours, definitely I did. And there's some where I'm like, I'm not going to remember all of this. So let's just get into it during the right when we're recording, because I'm always kind of moving. And so there's a few things that I pulled from what you said that I think are going to be really valuable. I might even do more of now that I've gone through this. So a couple of things that you do as a host to make sure that you're adding a lot of value to the guest and to the audience as well is you do your research ahead of time, number one. Number two, you do a phone call beforehand. And those are pre-interview things. And then at the interview itself, a couple things that you tend to do is number one, you keep it light and entertaining. You start slow with a guest. You might even ask them a couple of ridiculous questions before you get into the deep questions, because the rapport that you're going to have with your guest is going to help you to be able to deliver more value to the listener. So I like lesson number one, you know, research ahead of time. Lesson number two, have a pre-interview call. Lesson number three, keep it light and entertaining at the beginning of the episode, build rapport with the guest instead of just kind of moving too fast and just getting to it and asking the same questions every single time. So these are some of the things that I learned from you as far as pre-interview and interview so far. I'm going to extract more from you for the interview itself in a moment. Yep. But there's something that doesn't specifically relate to either of those that I also was able to take away from what you were talking about. And I thought that it was really valuable. I wanted to give that gem to the listener as well. And that's just talking about how you said season one was maybe a 4-hour interview that got broken up into three parts with your guest. And mm-hmm. so they're a little bit shorter. And one of the benefits that you got was you had one conversation with somebody, but you're able to deliver, you know, multiple episodes, which is pretty rad because now you're getting more content out. And so this whole idea of A, having seasons and you being able to change your season, like that's what you're doing now, but you don't always have to do that. Yep. In a little while, maybe you'll have season two is going to be more diving deep with one person or more where you like with this interview today. We have a topic. It's drawing out the good from your guest on the interview, right? And so mm-hmm. we are going to deliver that, but we're not having a 4-hour conversation knowing like all of your struggles.
I thought this was a 4-hour conversation. I'm not even going to eat lunch. What?
So I guess like just thinking about, I think some people might feel boxed in. Like sure. when they're launching a podcast, they don't even do anything because like... Yeah. They're afraid that it can't be changed. And so it's kind of like this theme that I'm getting from you today is perfection is a lie. It doesn't need to be, you don't need to have it all figured out like before you ever do anything, right? You can have a season one and you could change it up and have a season two. I mean, just as an idea, doesn't have to be for your show specifically, but you might start out a podcast and the first season, maybe the second season is geared toward little people. And maybe you, I don't know if this is going to happen, but just the third season doesn't have to be that. It could still be about being a big deal and it could still be like your story. It could still add value to a lot of people. Like you wouldn't have to be boxed into that. And the same thing with other people and their shows, don't stress so much about it. You can have a season two or a season three. It can change. You can develop it. I know a friend who has a real estate podcast. I do real estate investing on the side. I have a friend who has a real estate podcast and her name's Ellie Perlman. And it started out as deals kind of, she extracted the bad because she felt like other podcasters were all about the good. But she didn't want to do that anymore. Like it became a time where she was like only talking about the bad she wanted to fill a niche, but she said, I want to rebrand. So all she did is what you said. She created a season two. It's not focused the same way. And she was able to pivot. And if she wants to pivot again in season three, she can. I think that that's all really good stuff. You know, research ahead of time, do a phone call ahead of time. In the interview itself, start light, ask ridiculous questions like, what was the best thing that happened to you in the last 20 days or whatever, and try to get it light. And then, now, what did that feel as a little person? How did that affect you?
Yeah. And I think, you know, I'm still learning my path with this. You know, this is what I'm doing at the moment. I don't know that this is going to be, this might not be sustainable for the next year or 2 years down the road, because it is time consuming. And this is me doing the exercises to get better. And it's like drumming or surfing or any hobby or profession that you have. You start out a little bit slower. And then once you progress, you realize that you don't have to do all of the training wheels exercises that you were doing when you started out. Stuff gets better and you learn the things that work for you or that don't work for you, and you have to let them go. The perfection is a lie thing. That's been drilled into my head for decades, you know, but escaping it is such a difficult thing. It's so hard. You know, when I was making music and we would write a record, the record that came out was not the record that we imagined months prior. You know, when I'm surfing and I see a wave and I get on it, oftentimes it is not what I expected it to be. Sometimes it's better. Sometimes I get tossed. And that's just life. And that's just working out your process. And you can't control the stuff. You have to be okay with accepting, at some level, accepting what things are. That doesn't mean don't try, you know, keep trying. But yeah, you have to also respect the process and have confidence and faith in yourself that you're doing the right thing for you.
Love it. So let's see if there's any other tangible pieces that the listener is going to need when they're doing interviews. From your experience, what you've learned over time, how are you adding the most amount of value to your guest and to your audience in the rapport that you build with your guest and the questions that you ask with the guest? So how are you adding value to both people by rapport and questions?
So I try to listen a lot. I try not to banter with my guest. Again, a lot of times these are guests who are talking about shameful situations, or they haven't opened up about how they've felt about things. And when I listen to a show like that, I don't want to hear interjections. You know, I don't want to hear the host chiming in on things. I want there to be back and forth, but I really want my guests to express themselves. And I like that too, because I think it provides a little bit of tension. You know, your listener is also in on this. They're eavesdropping on this conversation and they have thoughts too. I've had conversations with some of my fans and they said, I like this because you let them just talk and line up what they were saying and then acknowledge that you heard them. And then you said, yeah, I actually don't believe what you said. And then you got some other answer out of them. And so that can happen and that's there. And if you're talking while your guest is talking, you know, and telling an incredible story or telling something that is really deep in their heart, it's just distracting to me. So I think listening is the best, just one of the things that I do try to be as good at as I possibly can. The other thing is I don't always have to follow the script. I come up with questions that I want them to answer. But when you listen, you will probably think of something else that you want to find out from them. And allowing it to be structured to a point, but then also having your listening affect what it is and how you answer. I mean, if somebody answers your next question in their question, don't ask that question again, you know? Yeah. But maybe you do want to ask that question again if you actually didn't get like everything you wanted out of it. You know, ask the same question in a different way. And I listen in my interviews, but I also listen to other shows. I try to deconstruct what I see other interviewers doing, or, you know, what I hear them doing. And is one of your favorite interviewer, like on the news or on a show or wherever? Like, what are they doing? Do they shut up? Do they like constantly interject? And when do they constantly interject? And why is it important that they do that? And I think that that's, I'm trying to think about that all the time.
I'm trying to think of like times in this interview that I've either interrupted you or interjected and where it could be better, where it could be worse. I'm just going through it. I just really, this is the most recent episode that I've done. I don't know if you knew that, but that was supposed to be a joke. You didn't laugh?
I'm laughing, man.
Okay. And so I'm thinking about, you know, where have I added value? Where have I listened? You know, where have I added too much and not given you a time, you know, to go through it? And I think kind of like that I'm just like you. I'm a podcast host and I have the gall to be the podcast host of the podcast I'm podcasting. And I'm trying to act like I know it all. Now, I know a lot of things, especially about marketing, but as far as like growing as a person, I just don't feel like we're ever all the way there. I feel like I've been a host of a podcast for about 4 years, and I sold, you know, like my first podcast and did well on that and launched this one. And, you know, at the time that this episode is live, I'm sure we're easily in the top 1%. Like those things are things that I love and I'm passionate about. But even though I have some skills, some pros, I feel like any podcast that I have, this one or the one that I sold, I can listen to like some of the first episodes and I can be super embarrassed by who I was and how I was. And, you know, years from now, I've already been doing this for 4 years. Years from now, I go back to this one and I'm like, oh, I can't believe I said midget and that was offensive. And I'm embarrassed by that. And I should have known better. And I can't believe that I cut him off or that I spent on this tangent that I'm on right now. I spent, you know, like 5 minutes on that. Why don't I just shut the F up and give Christoph more time? So it's like interesting that I believe that we're always going to be growing. We're always going to be gaining, and we can only know as much as we have in our brain today, but in a couple of weeks, a couple of episodes, a couple of months, a couple of years from now, we're developed as a better human being and a better interviewer. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I love that you said midget, honestly. Yeah, for sure. And this is why, because you allowed yourself to say that and you allowed yourself to be vulnerable and use that word. When I said later on or whatever, you know, please just learn or know, like that is an offensive term. You're not being so careful. You know, that is what's great about what this interview is you allow yourself to be vulnerable in that way. And that is important. You know, I don't believe that you're going to go out and start using the word midget around your friends. Now, what might happen is, and what my goal is, you know, if one of your friends uses the word midget, or if you talk about this interview with one of your friends or your family and you say, hey, I learned this, like, this is important actually, because this is an offensive term that relates to people with a disability that aren't seen in society as actual people. But I didn't know that before. So you saying that, man, it's great. Like, it is. But I'll be disappointed if you don't learn from it. And then that's the problem with that I have with, I don't have a problem with people using the word midget. You know, I have the problem with people who don't learn from using the word midget. You know, when you keep using it and you say, yeah, I don't really care. I mean, there are celebrities that do this. And that's another topic that I talk about on my show, is the portrayal of little people in media is, it's really terrible. You know, there's nothing out there for society to grasp onto and actually see us as actual people. So why not use the word midget continually? So, you know, if you learn from it and you find out that that's a sensitivity that people have in society, you don't go around and saying offensive terms about people in wheelchairs or about, you know, racially different individuals. That's not something, if you say it, you know, it's the best to learn from it and approach with sensitivity and empathy and say, okay, you know what? Like, I've learned, and that's a good thing. You know, being afraid of it would be you not saying anything at all. And so I applaud you. Like, I think that that's good because I do feel like you're a positive person and you will run with it in the positive way.
I appreciate that. And I think it all of the interview relates to us when we're becoming interviewers. I think that you mentioning that there was a level of vulnerability for using the term or any other term, like just like what I'm trying to emphasize for the listener is I want to be, you know, known as that person who helps people with their podcasts and grows their podcasts and does a great job. But I need to be vulnerable, open-minded, and let you be the expert on the things that you're the expert on. Let you teach from your experiences. Allow myself to ask questions that benefit me to be a better podcaster and the guest to be a better podcaster. I think at the end of the day, how we're doing our interviews for our audience, how we're doing our show, needs to make sure that we can be our genuine, authentic selves and deliver value to both people. In my mind, we need to deliver value to the guest that we have on the show, build rapport, connect, and deliver value to the listener, or else we're not going to have anybody listening. And it's not going to really be valuable to the guest anyway if nobody hears it. So what else have you done to kind of just either grow your audience or grow your connection with the audience? So we've talked a lot about adding value to your guest. And I think that you've got more in the can for just how to improve growing your audience or growing your relationship with your audience.
Sure. I struggle with that a lot. I am a one-man band in this podcast show. I can't afford an editor. I can't afford an assistant or anything like that. And so I do everything on my own. And thankfully, I have a background in audio and video production. So the editing isn't so confusing to me. And I have a background in acting and entertainment as well. So being around people and entertaining and talking with people is something that it's a skill that I've grown. And I knew that I had some of that there, but the promotion, the social media, the outreach, that stuff is tough for me. It really is. And I work so well on a one-on-one basis. You know, I know that is my strength. I can have long phone calls with people and I can have really great conversation and talk to them and learn about those people, but spreading it out to the far and wide is tough. I've obtained, you know, the handles for my show and they're uniform across the board. And I promote whenever I am on a show. I promote whenever I put my show out there. But that is the element that I need to put more attention. And it's tough. Do you have suggestions? Like, what, you're producing a show on podcasting. What would you, could you suggest anything to me?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. So it's a reverse interview for a second here. Number one, you have major skills in two areas. One of them is connecting with people and entertaining people one-on-one, and the post-production. So you got those nailed, and the parts that are holding you back, it sounds like, are going to be the desire to do the social media. I feel like you told me that you're putting out the social media when you, it almost felt like you said, I do it when I have to. It's like, okay, I was interviewed on someone's show. I feel obligated to kind of put this out, so I'm going to do it.
So that's it, so just bad.
But so it doesn't really sound like you're just excited about it, right? And everybody's personality is going to be different. So this isn't something that really excites you. You're not grateful that you get to make this social media post. It's almost a chore. It's like, man, all right, what should I say? I want to make sure that I add value to this person that I was on their show. I want to make sure that people listen and engage in this post. But it just might feel like a chore. And then the other thing is the show promotion of maybe growing the audience. So for you, I feel like part of that audience growth is you just being real and authentically who you are, which is naturally going to keep retention of the people that are listening now because they're being entertained. They're having good audio quality and sound quality because you got that stuff on lock. And you're able to just be you. And I think a problem with other podcasters is that they don't yet know how to be themselves. They really want to deliver a certain thing, and they have an idea in their mind of what that is, and they try to fake it till they make it because they hear so many people say, you gotta fake it till you make it. That's sure. such a common term. So what you're doing is you're being somebody who's open to letting people into your world, into your head, into your emotions, your thoughts, your feelings, your experiences, which is benefiting you a ton in two ways. When they come to you, they stay with you. And when they hear a value, they're going to share it with a friend. It might be another little person friend. It might be whoever.
Yep.
But they're going to share it with somebody who they think resonates with that message. So those parts you're doing awesome. I think where you're might be neglecting, or what it sounds like you're neglecting, is actual promotion, ads. I don't know if you, it doesn't sound like you have any sponsors right now. If I were to work with you and support you to get this, our goal would be is, hey, how do we make sure that you have enough downloads and listens that a sponsor who sees your target audience is able to wanting to put their money toward the show? If that's all we do, most of the clients that I work with, the goal is to whatever it costs you in marketing dollars or post-production dollars, if you don't want to edit it yourself, or having someone just physically go in, like a virtual assistant can post some of this stuff for you too. Whatever sure. that stuff costs you, those three things, we want to make sure that you make that in your podcast. How do you do that? A, you sell your own products or services or coaching or consulting events. You sell your own online courses, or if you don't have your own book to sell or one of those other things that I mentioned, the other two ways to make money is through affiliate relationships. So somebody wants to be part of your podcast. I could be a good example. I might want to get in front of people who are not used to sharing their story in your podcast, because that's your perfect listener, is somebody who's not used to it, it sounds like. And so if I could probably develop some type of copy, an ad that I put on your podcast that says, get your story out, share it with the world, be liberated, something like this, where all of a sudden now I'm paying for the marketing and publishing of your podcast. So you don't have to do that anymore because yeah. I'm able to kind of tap in. Or maybe because I'm naive to all of your stuff, but it sounds like many little people end up having back surgeries, leg surgeries. So there could be a reconstructive surgeon or medical space, the best one in the country or the best one in the world, who wants to be part of your audience and say, we do this, we do this, we do this, you know? Yep. And all of a sudden they're paying for offloading all of this stuff. And you don't have to do the posts anymore because you might have somebody yeah. who loves the posts. So those are a couple of things. But if I feel like if we're not marketing our show in two ways, one way you got to market your show to your own audience. If you've got an email list or a Facebook or friends or family that you know personally, you tell them about it. But the other way is paid advertising, paid marketing and promotions or collabs. Oh, and actually there's a third where you're being interviewed on other people's show like you are today. Because mm-hmm. then a few people hear the story, and if 1,000 people hear this, two of them are probably going to go listen to your show. Mm-hmm. Maybe not 100 or, but at least two of them. And so you get interviewed on lots of other people's shows. People keep hearing your story, hearing what your podcast is all about. They start going. So that's the third way. But the second way is this paid promotion, Facebook ads. My company, I will try to say this fast because we need to be fast on it. But my company does a lot of different types of promotion for people. The most effective one is the hardest one. It's the one-on-one where we reach out to people on social media. What works really well about it is that we're a third party. We become a third party. And so like, if I was promoting your show as a really good example, I could go to LinkedIn and I could go to Facebook and I could literally search for little people, use whatever terms that I would need on Facebook to find more people with the same disability. And then I could reach out and just say, hey, what podcasts are you listening to? What's going on? How are these things? And then just say, man, you don't listen to Christoph's podcast? You didn't hear that last episode? And then I could just literally send them, hey, do you mind if I send it to you? Sure. Go ahead and send me the link. Yeah. Here's the link. And then we follow up with them a little bit later. And we say, hey, did you hear that last episode that just dropped? That was pure fire. He was spitting fire. It was a solo episode. And did you hear it? And so that keeps them listening. So that's kind of like what my team does. These private messaging is what works the most. And I think part of why it works really well is that we're only asking questions and we never send a link without permission, but also because we're a third party for you.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were doing it yourself, you would do it slightly different, where you would just have those relationships with people. And then you would say to them, man, that thing that you're struggling with, it doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be a little person podcast. Let's call a real estate podcast. Hey, are you finding deals? Are you struggling to find deals or private money? And they say yes, or they tell you that that's their issue. And you say, man, listen, I know this is self-promotion, but my episode 242 talks all about how to select a market. Do you mind if I send you the link to that episode? Because it will add value to you.
Yep.
So you can still do it. It's just a lot of effing work by yourself, but it works.
Sure. Yeah.
So however, those are some of the things that I might suggest. Get a sponsor and let it offload the costs of the things that you want to have happen. Promotion, marketing, somebody else editing it for you so that you don't have to, even though you're good at it. You know, get a sponsor, then start doing what you want. Like, because you got the money coming in, your podcast is making money.
Yep.
So, Christoph.
I love it.
It is at the time that my next interview happens, because I didn't put 4 hours. And so what I want to do is I want to have you share with the listener. And by the way, these links are going to be in the show notes also. So you can scroll down, but share with the listener, how do they find the podcast, and share with them, what is the one single best way that they get a hold of you?
Absolutely. So thank you so much for having me on. You can find I'm Kind of a Big Deal on Apple Podcasts and wherever else you get your podcasts. Instagram, you can find me at Big Deal Pod, at Big Deal Pod.
Big Deal Pod, at Big Deal Pod. Christoph, thank you so much for jumping on the show, adding value, helping us to be able to connect better with our listener, with our audience, with our guest, build that rapport, ask better questions, ask silly questions, get deep, and kind of get the F out of the way and just let our guests sometimes speak and be better listeners. And that's the way that we add value to everybody. I got a lot out of this. I suggest that the listener go and check out I'm Kind of a Big Deal or the other link for his social media handles. That's all in the show notes. I'm going to let you go. Bye for now, brother.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
This episode is brought to you by growyourshow.com. Grow Your Show lets you be the star of your show while we handle all the hard stuff. We offer reliable and affordable post-production services that allow you to grow your show organically without all the work. So go ahead and check out the website right now and feel free to schedule a call with me and let's take your show to the next level. Again, growyourshow.com. You just press record. We handle the rest.